This is Joanna Schrader reporting for DomesticFuel.com, and today I am with Raymond Learcy, who is the author of Ruminations on the Distortion of Oil Prices and Crony Capitalism. Raymond, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Well, Raymond, this is a very interesting book, and you've really taken on an extremely complicated, or maybe to you, not complicated subject of big oil. And the purpose of this book was really to help consumers and just help people in general understand what's really driving oil prices. So I think that's the first question. Raymond, what is really driving oil prices?
Well, what should be driving oil prices is supply and demand. You know, that's what our system looks to evaluate and to determine the nature of a commodity or the price of anything. But in oil, we have other factors that are really impacting the price of oil. First of all, you have something called the OPEC cartel. I'm sure you've read about it. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. They control 30% of the world's oil production and openly collaborate to restrain production in order to influence price. So they have been very successful in conveying or in impacting the oil market in such a way that prices go up, because that's, of course, in their interest. So you have that aspect of oil, so which already takes away from the determination of supply and demand. And then you have something else, which is nefarious and not really looked to and not really regulated, nor is there meaningful oversight by our government agencies, both here and overseas. And that is the trading of oil on the commodity exchanges. Once upon a time, when I was a trader and dealing physical commodities, you bought and sold oil, and you bought a barrel of oil, and you took title to a barrel of oil, and then you shipped that barrel of oil and sold it in to whomever, you know, whichever refiner or government agency was purchasing oil at that time. For example, in India, all of the oil purchases were really channeled through government agencies that made the foreign exchange available to purchase the oil. So you dealt with oil as a product. Today, for every barrel of oil that is produced, there is, on average, 30 contracts of paper oil traded, which means that oil has really become a financial instrument. These are oil derivatives, oil futures contracts, which are bought and sold, and not necessarily by the producer in order to protect his profit or to put off risk, nor by the consumer, the refineries, etc., to alleviate risk or at least to organize their risk. It is bought and sold in large measure by people who never touch the oil, never see the oil, probably have never been close to an oil rig. It is traded over desks in banks and in hedge funds or private traders. People have no interest whatsoever in the end product, nor in the produced product, only simply using it as a financial instrument to trade. And therefore, it lends itself to enormous amount of mischief. Let me give you another sort of example. Commodities are also traded for soybeans and corn, etc. And you have Farmer Jones, who grows wheat or soybeans, and Farmer Smith, who grows corn. Farmer Jones grows his crop and sells it according to the price on the commodity exchanges. Now, he doesn't have the means, nor the wherewithal, nor is there an industry or an agricultural committee that looks after his prices. So those prices are really a reasonable reflection on what that commodity is worth, be it soybeans, corn, wheat for Farmer Smith or Jones, etc. They grow their crop and they try to sell it at the highest possible price, but they do not have the organization nor the means to really control the prices on the commodity exchanges. Now look at the oil industry. What industry is wealthier? Who is better in place to really deal with the commodities in such a way that they reflect the maximum for the product that they produce? I mean, you have Saudi Arabia producing something like 10 million barrels a day, and they have sovereign wealth funds that range nearly $1 trillion. Now, you mean to tell me, and I don't know whether they're doing this, you know, my own thinking, that would it not be to their advantage to play the commodity markets in such a way that maximizes the price for their actual produced product that they ship throughout the world? And the same thing for, you know, the Russian oil companies, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, we're dealing with a commodity that is traded on exchanges over which, by the way, we have virtually no control. We have something called the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. Now, that is people, by and large, by people who have been or have worked on Wall Street. And they are, you know, open to those relationships. And in January 1990, the Congress of the United States, they directed the Commodity Futures Trading Commission to set up limits on the amount of contracts on the commodity exchanges traders and or other entities could hold. That's 3.5 years ago. Since that time, well, the only thing that has been done as a ruse, at least in my opinion, to do nothing, is to study the problem, to have hearings and hearings and hearings and more hearings and more hearings and yet more hearings. And nothing has been done. There is no real oversight by government of the commodity exchanges, and there is no real dealing by our government with the nefarious impact of the OPEC cartel. Now, all those issues play into the determination of the price of oil.
Well, Raymond, I have to laugh about, you know, maybe out of context about talking about how we keep having hearings, and the only thought I can say is, isn't that our government at work? Look at the situation we're in, which you touch on in your book about, I mean, this country just can't even run itself financially. But I do want to take a step back. When you're talking about the trading and you're talking about the commodity trading, I mean, are the traders themselves and their clients not also getting rich off the speculation and these paper trades that they're making?
Well, I've written a number of columns. I mean, there was an issue with Chevron at one time and BP at another time, where these oil companies have trading desks. They have trading desks, and they have been charged with manipulating the price of the downstream products of oil, you know, whether it's heating oil or propane or something like that. They have trading desks, they know what the production situation is in the world, and they are able, you know, to trade in such a way that they make money, and you and I pay the piper because those higher prices come out of our pockets. Now, both BP and Chevron have paid penalties in this particular area, and that was some years ago. But by and large, you really don't have the oversight you need. in order to really contain the distortions that go on in oil trading and that result in the prices that that we are paying for gasoline. I mean, it is shameful, mm-hmm. just shameful, that the price of oil is, you know, close to $100 a barrel.
Well, Raymond, when you first talked about how when you were at the trading desk, you know, 30 years ago, if we went back to that style of trading and you hit on it about actually trading a real barrel of oil, mm-hmm. What should a barrel of oil cost, and how would that translate to consumers who are paying the cost of heating oil and gas, et cetera?
Well, we consume close to 20 million barrels of oil a day, okay? About 18, 19, about a year or so ago, it was close to 20. Let's use 20 million because it's a nice round figure. We consume about 20 million barrels of oil a day. In April and March of 2011, might have been May, I don't know, in my book, there is specific reference to it. The CEO of Exxon Petroleum, before a Senate committee, suggested that the price of oil, because of the commodity exchanges and trading on the commodity exchanges, was $30 to $40 a barrel higher than it should be. Now, when a man of that stature, Rex Tillerson, makes that kind of a statement to a government committee, and there is no government follow-through on the issue, that's staggering. Now, what that means, say it was not $40, but $30. That means out of the pockets of consumers every day, with 20 million barrels of oil being consumed in all manner of forms, whether it's gasoline or heating oil or propane, et cetera, that $600 million a day goes unjustifiably from oil interests, from the public at large, from consumers at large, in the United States alone, to oil interests. $600 million a day. And nobody in Washington is rattling that issue.
I mean, Raymond, that's staggering. I mean, in obviously, this is one of the reasons you've written this book. I mean, this is staggering to me. I'm having a hard time truly getting my head around, and I've read your book, you know, just really getting my head around these types of numbers. Why? So what's the problem? Is the problem our government? Is the problem that the consumers aren't really watchdogging or policing the government, and we keep electing these people that we know are in the pockets of big oil?
Well, I think it's a combination of all. You know, I mean, the oil industry or oil interests have been enormously effective in conditioning the consuming public that the price of oil is a rational result of supply and demand. We had for years the rationalization that oil was at a peak level and would only diminish in supply, and therefore it had to be priced at high levels in order to curtail consumption. I've written for years that peak oil is snake oil, that it is simply a rationalization for high prices. Since that time, we've had all these discoveries of oil in, you know, throughout the United States, shale oil, where the bounty of our own oil is making us close to becoming the largest oil producers in the world. Mm-hmm. And that oil is only beginning to be tapped. There's plenty of oil all over. So, you know, here we had for years, we were inured to high prices because of the story of peak oil. Then, of course, there are hurricanes in the Gulf. There are problems in Nigeria. There is the Straits of Hormuz in the Persian Gulf. You name it, any time that there is any kind of incident, the price of oil shoots up because it is in the interest of the oil industry to really accentuate these disturbances in such a way that it impacts the price of oil.
Mm-hmm. Well, Raymond, I'm sure a consumer is probably sitting here thinking, well, okay, so we are just about to, actually, I think we have announced that we've surpassed Russia and have become the largest energy producer. Well, why don't we just keep our energy then and reduce our oil prices?
Well, we're the largest, again, commodity exchange.
Right.
We're producing up to last week, 2 weeks ago, the price was $110 a barrel. Totally off the charts in terms of anything that has to do with rationality. It's gone down a little bit over the last week or so, but it's still way, way, way above what it should be. And what should consumers do? They should really get on the telephone or on their email or what have you and start hectoring their elected representatives to really take charge of the situation. Because on the other side, you have lobbyists, highly paid, well-connected, who are really singing the tune of the oil interests and the oil industry. And, us regular people, we don't have the beginnings nor the means to counter that kind of heavyweight money and influence.
Mm-hmm. So, Raymond, what do we do? What needs to change? I mean, if I let you take over our government for a day, what would you change to try to get this situation in hand?
Well, I would fire everybody on the exception of one commissioner on the Commodities Futures Trading Commission. And that is Bart Chilton. Bart Chilton has really been the one commissioner who's been singing the song of every man, asking the hard questions, trying to get them to do the right thing. He's outvoted on the committee, and he can't move forward because everybody else moves against him. So I would change the commissioners on the CFTC. The FTC has recently initiated an investigation on the manipulation of oil prices. That was a few months ago. Since that time, we've heard nothing. I would make sure that the FTC either gets to work or change the head of the FTC to make sure that there's somebody in there who really addresses this issue. The Department of Justice also put together an oil price fraud commission back in April of 2011 with a much tra-tra-tra. It's much tra-la-la, excuse me, and even with the announcement by President Obama that this committee was being formed, that committee, we have not heard one word out of that committee in all this time. I mean, the influence of not only the oil industry, of people who have made billions trading oil, of the commodity exchanges, remember the CME, which owns the New York Mercantile Exchange, where the oil is traded, the CME, is headquartered in Chicago. And there's a lot of Chicago influence in this government. So, you have enormous influence being weighed against you and I as consumers, in support of the industry and industry's interests in order to continue things as they are. And there's no real voice out there saying, stop, you guys have really taken our interests, the public interest, to heart and deal with this issue with people who are objective and not simply working on a revolving door basis with Wall Street and all the other financial interests and the oil companies.
Mm-hmm. Well, Raymond, I would argue that you're trying to at least be that voice. other than your books, and you've written several, where else can people go to read about this issue, to read what you're writing? You know, this book had a lot of blog posts and references to articles, but if I want to check you out every day, Raymond, where do I go?
Good question. I don't know if there is really, you know, a dialogue out there on this issue that is in any way, you know, that has substance. By substance, I don't mean that the issues are, you know, touched upon here and there, but substance in the way of affecting change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of the real problems is that the media has not really dug into this. That the media did not pick up Tillerson's comments and have essay after essay or opinion piece after opinion piece in the papers is staggering to me. And, of course, you know, you go on television, you have enormous amount of advertising by the CNE or by the oil companies, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they're a powerful voice, and they can very readily hurt the people who might hold them up to questioning. One of the reasons I began writing about this issue is because I was looking around for somebody, something, anywhere to really touch on these things.
Right. Well, Raymond, you do write quite regularly at the Huffington Post. I know you've also been on NPR and CNBC and New York Times.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll send people to some of those places to keep track, and then, you know, obviously, Raymond, where can they get your book? You know, we really need people reading this book.
You can get it on Amazon. Just, you know, look under my name, UCLEARSY. And the book is there, and some of my previous books as well. And they deal on this issue the last half dozen years. The books that I have published so far.
Great. Do you have plans to keep writing, to publish another book on this issue?
I don't know. I'm getting to the point where I feel I said everything I can say, and I think that, you know, it's I'm becoming I'm becoming a little tired of saying more or less the same things and nobody listening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're not alone there. But, well, I think this is a good call to action. Hopefully we can really, you know, keep trying to get consumers to wake up a little bit and start caring about energy and you know, they have to go beyond complaining about the pump and actually taking action. And
yeah.
And that's...
To my mind, the price of oil and what people are paying for oil is the greatest ripoff in history.
Mm-hmm.
When you multiply the consumption of oil and its price, not only in the United States, but throughout the world, the amount of money that is transferred to oil companies and oil interests is, you know, almost beyond caffeine.